All right, we're back. Steve Alexander, always an interesting co-host. He'll be with us again next week. Steve was just telling us an interesting story about aviation, and we have an aviation anniversary that I think is worth mentioning on this program. We'll come back to that in a second, however. At this point in time, there is a growing concern that investment in the United States stock market is being hindered by the lack of investor confidence. The fact that CEOs seem to be making giant sums of money through stock options that are based on manipulations and accounting procedures that are dubious, to say the least, is genuinely impacting the market at this point, and people have been warning for years that this could happen. Well, now it is happening. Sacramento Bee, July 11th, ran an editorial on George Bush's a tough speech on corporate malfeasance. I'd like to quote briefly from that. In 1989, Bush was the director of Harkin Energy. To cover its woes, it pulled an Enron-style accounting gambit. The company sold a subsidiary to a partnership of Harkin insiders who used a loan from Harkin to make the purchase. Harkin then booked the transaction to pump up its reported results. The Securities and Exchange Commission eventually forced the company to restate its earnings, but not before Bush sold two-thirds of his stake in the company at $4 a share, taking in $848,000 in a transaction he failed to report in a timely way. Later that year, after the SEC action was announced, Harkin's share price fell to $1. Now, of course, Vice President Richard Cheney is also under the gun a bit. Working for Halliburton Company before he became vice president, Cheney evidently employed Arthur Andersen and was quoted, and I'm very sorry I missed this, last week on National Public Radio, they quoted an old radio excerpt from Cheney complimenting Arthur Andersen on what a good accounting firm they were because they'll do extra things for you and go the extra mile, in effect. Now, of course, it's a very good thing to read beyond the headlines into the depths of your newspaper, listen to various radio stations like this one, like NPR, that can give you in-depth analysis of the news and therefore keep you better informed than you are with the likes of Nightly Network News and USA Today. Now, there's one story that is, in fact, the anniversary. Yesterday, this would be July the 17th, it marks the 6th anniversary of the downing of TWA Flight 800 with a loss of 230 lives just south of Long Island. It's worth taking a couple minutes to review this incident for you, the listening audience. 6 years ago, this plane, TWA 800, basically blew up over the ocean and crashed with a loss of all lives on board. Initial news reports were filled with eyewitness descriptions of an object that appeared to be a missile rising up from the sea to gain an altitude where it intercepted the plane, causing an initial explosion that was shortly afterwards followed by a much larger explosion that destroyed the aircraft. The FBI basically took charge of the investigation because of the clear implication that the plane had been deliberately downed by a missile, therefore implying a possible act of terrorism. Rather amazingly, in the last 6 years, although the plane has now been secretly sold off for scrap and an investigation left inconclusive, there's been no decision as to what caused the aircraft to explode. The idea that it was an attack by a missile was slowly moved away from, and we were left with the possible explanation that the center fuel tank of the Boeing 747 had spontaneously exploded. It had never happened before. It has never happened since. And rather amazingly, in America's litigious society, in spite of the loss of 200 lives, involving thousands of surviving family members and God knows what number of hungry lawyers in this country, there has been no successful product liability lawsuit against Boeing. There appears to be no successful lawsuit against TWA. Now, this is very unusual. I know in one recent study of airplane crashes in this country, I'm not sure over what time period they took place, a year or two perhaps, a time period in which 208 airplanes crashed, there were 208 product liability lawsuits against the aircraft manufacturer. In every case, the manufacturer was sued. Now, as a pilot, I can tell you that the cause of most crashes is pilot error. Specifically, the cause of 50% of the crashes in this country is running out of fuel. Now, had there been any lack of attention to detail on the part of TWA or Boeing, there'd be a lawsuit. It's very strange that 6 years later, there's been no official determination that the center fuel tank was indeed the source of explosion. But people that looked into this matter have claimed there's a lot of evidence to support the idea that an errant missile, most likely accidentally fired by the United States Navy, brought down TWA 800. We're not going to get into this in great detail today. It's worthy of a future segment on a show, a full segment. But just by way of review, the Navy was stationed off the coast of Long Island on this date 6 years ago. Numerous witnesses had described what appeared to be drone missiles being fired off to sea from Long Island that day. There was a famous photograph published in Newsweek magazine taken at a party that shows a cylindrical cigar-shaped object going out to sea from Long Island with what appears to be flame emitted from the lower side as it rises up into the air. Over 100 witnesses described this missile rising up from the sea to strike the aircraft. 34 witnesses deemed especially credible were triangulated that showed they were all consistent and described in three dimensions the direction from which the missile would have come. There were Air National Guard pilots in the air close to the explosion who witnessed the burning object rise up, traveling east to west to strike the aircraft, causing an explosion. There exists on the tape of air traffic control the recording of the radar showing an object intercepting the path of the aircraft before the explosion. Maps of the debris pattern showed there appeared to have been an explosion driving right to left as the aircraft was flying east before the main body of the plane came down. Inside the aircraft, there were clear reports of a red stain across several rows of seats, and the author James Sanders, who wrote the book The Downing of Flight 800, was leaked two swatches of material that he had analyzed that appeared to show metal residues. The controls of seat backs that were left floating in the ocean showed no such residues. These residues are consistent with that of a solid fuel rocket. In short, there's compelling evidence that a terrible accident took place while attempting to intercept missiles off of the coast of Long Island, where apparently Navy missile mistook a commercial aircraft flight for one of the drones it was supposed to be shooting down, the drone that was actually captured on film, as seen by witnesses prior to that day. At any rate, this is a worthy topic of further investigation, and we will come back to it in the weeks to come. On happier notes in technology and science matters, Russia in the past week has called for a joint mission to Mars to send a crew to the Red Planet around the year 2015. And they're reporting some encouraging signs from NASA on this. This makes a great deal of more sense than the International Space Station, which is going to be whizzing around the Earth to no good purpose. We believe very strongly that going to Mars would be a wonderful adventure for the human race. It may never prove to be something that's particularly profitable of an endeavor. But when you assume that the amount of money it's going to cost is going to be no more than a major weapon system, and all studies show that to be the case, then what you're going to get back out of this is probably going to be a lot more valuable. The Odyssey spacecraft shows there's a lot more water on Mars than even the optimists had hoped. This would be able to sustain a manned mission once it arrived there. You could generate oxygen and hydrogen and, of course, drinking water off the sources that you'd find there. Something that we certainly feel, again, very strongly about that we should do, and stay tuned. We're going to come back to that. Also, in some other good news, it appears that a NASA-commissioned survey released last week a plan to actually send a spacecraft out to Pluto. Whether this is still going to happen or not, it's going to require some funding, but they're on board is saying, yes, it's a good idea. Pluto is, of course, the last planet in the solar system that man has not sent a robot out to explore. And we're encouraged by this possibility. Another small bit of interesting technologic news. Robert Ballard, the man who's had such success in probing the ocean depths for various wrecks, announced this month that he has found PT-109, the torpedo boat that was commanded by John F. Kennedy during World War II. The boat was sunk after being hit by a Japanese destroyer in 1943 near the Solomon Islands. The PT boats are very interesting, wooden boats built to move very quickly and harass the Japanese. They had a great deal of success in the war. Kennedy's boat was struck on a moonless night, sheared off a portion of the stern, and sent apparently two of his crew died on board. The 11 surviving crewmen were basically led by Lieutenant Kennedy, who literally swam with one of the man's life jackets gripped in his teeth to a nearby island. Kennedy was later awarded the National Marine Corps Medal and a Purple Heart for his valorous action, and more importantly, was hailed by his surviving crewmen for his genuine heroism. Most particularly, the man who was in the life jacket that Kennedy swum to shore testified that he owed his life to his commander. Now, in rather striking contrast to the actions of John F. Kennedy in the Pacific in World War II, Lyndon Baines Johnson, his successor, managed to get himself awarded the Silver Star for bravery for actions that took place in the Pacific Theater. Johnson actually flew one combat mission as a congressional observer. Now, other planes in the group apparently were shot down, and this did involve actual exposure to enemy fire, but Johnson afterward managed to finagle himself the Navy's Silver Star, which he managed to get himself awarded in ceremonies all over the state of Texas by every judge and local official that he could get his hands on. Now, in next week's show, Stuart Gardner is going to come on and talk to us about a little bit about Lyndon Johnson in the wake of Robert Caro's fantastic new book, the third in what's going to be a five-part series in the life of Lyndon Johnson. This one's titled Master of the Senate. Stuart will come on to talk to us a little bit about the great conspiracy that took place in America for 80 years in the Old South in the wake of the Civil War to deny voting rights to blacks. And how Lyndon Johnson, in an effort to further his own presidential ambitions, decided that even though he was a Southerner backed by the Southern Caucus, he was going to give black Americans a little bit of assistance with the Voting Rights Act in 1957. The idea of blacks, the South, and voting rights is an issue that still reverberates in America. Witness the 2000 election, where the disenfranchisement of so many African-American voters in Florida wound up being the key to the Bush election. So we look forward to having Stuart on board next week. And now, a quick comedy blast from the past.
See that bear lapping up that good old country water? Sure makes a big, hairy guy like me thirsty. That's when I wrap my lips around a tall, sweaty, edible bottle of good old country Bear Whiz beer. As my daddy said, son, it's in the water. That's why it's yellow. Bear Whiz beer.
Bear Whiz beer, liquid product of Andrew Bear Whiz Brewery, Animal, Missouri.
That, of course, was the wacky Fire Sign Theater. Let's take a short break.